This is Thought Crime. I am your host, Wesley Fox, editor and commander of PressingSciFi.com. I hope everyone had a great holiday, plenty of family and fun, or whatever your plans called for this December holiday season. Also, Happy New Year's. It is now 2017, of course. My New Year's wasn't really all that exciting. It's around here, it's kind of turned into a date night. Most of my friends went out with their significant others, kind of a two-pairing kind of thing. No, we don't really get together as a group and go to some major party downtown like we did back in the day. I guess that means either I'm getting older or maybe New Year's is kind of changing in its meaning for people. It's not really like the big kind of let's get everyone together in one place kind of thing anymore, which is fine. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities to do that. I think maybe the sort of accidents, tragedies, or kind of the things that have happened on New Year's and years past have kind of tempered everyone a little bit. You have, you know, not to get too down, but, you know, DUIs, you know, traffic accidents, fights, breakups. And so maybe I think everyone has decided, or maybe in this area, I don't know. But among the people in my social circle and even in the peripheral, a lot of them have decided to be a little bit more moderate to low key, you know, just couples going out to some nice restaurant or some nice place, maybe double dating, you know, stuff like that. So being single as I am, that means that, you know, I had to fend for myself. I found a couple friends that also wanted to go out, and they did not want to do the couples thing. So I had a fun time at a brewery right down the road. It's a brewery slash kind of club, whatever. They had live music all throughout the night. It was fun for me, you know, just not a huge group of people, but, you know, that's just not the way people roll anymore. So anyway, enough about me. For this episode 46, I'm going to give a preview of 2017 for science fiction and a little bit of fantasy and other things going on that I'm interested in, TV, movies, you know, what's going to go on in the year ahead. So I'm going to start with TV, because I think movies is a little bit too easy, and I think a lot of people already know just from trailers and, you know, rumors and social media. I think everyone kind of knows for the most part what movies are coming up, but maybe TV too. In any event, I think I decided to start with TV first because it's, you know, these things can fall through the cracks. So without further ado, let's get into the new and continuing TV shows for 2017. The first one I want to talk about is The Handmaid's Tale, which will premiere on Hulu, I believe, in April. It's based on the dystopian classic by Margaret Atwood, which I think was published somewhere in the 80s, 84, 85. It is one of the best dystopian novels I've ever read. It's top three, easily. For those of you that are not familiar with it, it's about a alternate society called Gilead, which it's a theocratic, hardline Christian society that kind of takes over for part of the United States. And the tale centers around the experiences of Offred, who is they call her a handmaid, but she's basically a concubine. And she's treated as a second or third class citizen whose sole purpose is basically to be a surrogate mother to this high-ranking aristocratic family. The wife and the family can no longer bear children, so these handmaids are used as basically walking uteruses. So... And the society and everything is based loosely off of, you know, very, very ultra, ultra fundamentalist Christian, and I would argue Muslim kind of ideas on the role of women in society and what could happen when you take something like, for example, the fundamentalist Christian views on women, on marriage, on children, and the right to divorce, the right to abortion, and things like that. And it's, you take it to an extreme, some would argue a logical conclusion. I would say you just take it to an extreme if basically you took the rails off and let this thing go all the way to the end. This is what you would end up with. And I think it's an amazing story. It's an amazing book. I highly recommend it to anyone who has not read it yet. The show, which will be on Hulu, I checked a little bit into it. Obviously, it's building up some hype with the people who know the book. Feminists, fans of dystopians, all of them are very much looking forward to it. I think maybe some people that love kind of progressive style TV shows might be looking forward to this because it kind of, I mean, there's no getting around it. This show is probably going to paint Christian conservatives in a not so flattering light, because that's basically what happens in the book. A very ultra fundamentalist Christian conservative regime takes power and imposes these crazy rules. So there's no getting around it. No matter what they try to do, people are going to start raising hell and say, oh, it's all political, it's all progressive. I would argue that this isn't really political, because these regimes do exist. They are real, and they do take power and take control in places where there is an opportunity to take control, and where people start just becoming less and less rational and less interested in, well, what would you call it? Less interested in consensus, less interested in compromise, and less interested in living with one another. Basically, it's my way or the highway kind of thing, and if you're willing to use force to impose it, this is the kind of result you get. It's happened in history a lot of times, and that's what I think the book portrays, and I think the TV show will do the same. It stars, I'm looking at the cast right now, and there's only two names that I really recognize. The rest of them are younger actresses and younger actors that I just don't know anything about. But the key player is Elizabeth Moss, who will be playing Offred, who is the protagonist of the book. Elizabeth Moss, I know her from West Wing. She played Zoe Bartlett, one of President Bartlett's daughters, the youngest one, I think, who gets kidnapped in one of the seasons. A talented actress. I know she's been in plenty of other things since then, but just none of it has ever really jumped out at me. And to be honest, she has never really made a massive impression on me. But she'll be playing Offred. She's much, you know, she's about much older now than she was during West Wing. So I think it's an interesting pick. I don't know. I guess I don't have anyone in mind that I would want to do it that would do better. So I think it's a good pick. Joseph Fiennes plays the commander. You would know Joseph Fiennes from Shakespeare in Love, Enemy at the Gates, things like that. Very good actor, very long experienced, huge filmography. He can definitely get the job done as the commander. I'm trying to see some of these other names. Amanda Bruguel, Samira Wiley, Yvonne Stravosky, Ever Carradine, Jordana Blake. O.T. Fegbenly, who plays Luke. I just don't know any of these other actresses or actors. And I looked a little bit into their backgrounds, and I saw, and they all are pretty accomplished. I mean, they're not, I don't think any of these are rookies, but, you know, but they've decided to go with, you know, a pretty young cast, with the exception of Joseph Fiennes and maybe one or two others, and relative unknowns. It is Hulu, and Hulu doesn't really have the big bucks to bring in a lot of high-profile names, so that might have had something to do with it. But I am very optimistic about this show. If they stay true to the source material, I think it's a very powerful story. I think it's a very powerful and poignant themes about women's rights, feminism, the role of the role that extremism can play when you take an idea that you take any idea to an extreme degree, you can get things like this, these distortions. I'll give you a few examples. Like in Gilead, in the book, basically they look at women as second-class citizens, as you would think. So things like divorce, abortion, extramarital affairs, children like that, those are all seen as crimes. And so Offred actually is captured, imprisoned, and trained to be a handmaid because she got divorced. That was her only crime. And also one of the new laws in this theocratic regime is that women could not have jobs. They could not own property. So basically everything she had was transferred over to her new husband, her second husband. And then something happened to him and then also her daughter, who was the product of the divorce of the previous marriage, was taken away from her. So basically women that just do not behave the way the theocracy thought they should behave are moved into these internment re-education camps where they're converted into servants, handmaids. Most of their rights are taken away. Naturally, you know, they have all these laws that, you know, I mean, it's just like in any kind of power structure when you can have laws on the books against rape and assault, but no one was going to protect Offred from those kind of things. So in the book, she is basically abused, objectified, and basically treated, as a total servant with no rights and no real anything. So that is that show. That it's definitely not uplifting. I think we have plenty of uplifting television with all the superhero, you know, Marvel and DC TV shows we have, and even like shows like Big Bang and NCIS. I mean, NCIS is about serious issues, but they go at it with a very bright light. And so I think Handmaid's Tale will be a welcome kind of dark, more honest and more mature look at, you know, the kind of world we live in right now instead of this, you know, cookie cutter 50 minutes. But anyway, these TV shows that kind of look at serious themes, they tend to put a brighter light on it. I mean, these cop shows, gun shows, superheroes, everything, like it's always, there is some serious points in it, but they generally will not take on serious issues for more than 30 seconds. So that's kind of my critique of most kind of mainstream, kind of the national, you know, CBS, NBC, ABC entertainment. The bulk of their dramas are fantasy, they're wish fulfillment, they're kind of detached and separated from real, you know, real world issues and real world realities. That's, I don't know where I came up with that. Anyway, they just don't want to take on the big things for fear of being politically controversial, for fear of being called partisan or whatever. I don't know. That's my guess. But that is Handmaid's Tale, premieres in April on Hulu, and I am looking forward to that one. So that's number one. Number two is Stranger Things, which was awesome. It was a Netflix original, premiered in the summer of last summer, and the second season begins sometime in 2017. I can't find an exact date. But it was an amazing show, kind of a cross between X-Files and Super 8 and E.T., a little bit of like those classic 80s horror movies where the kids are like the target. I mean, it was an awesome show, and they really captured I was only a few months old in 1983, but it was, they really captured a lot. I mean, the dress, everything, the music, the dress, the technology, everything looked like it came from 1983. They did a fantastic job. The casting was well done. The acting was first rate for a Netflix original, and even first rate in general. I think they were nominated for a few awards, as they should have been. Just great, great stuff. But what to look forward to in season two? Let's see. I have it here. All right, Sean Astin. You might know him as Samwise Gamgee, or Rudy will be part of this. Paul Reiser. I didn't know he was still alive, but he is going to be joining the cast. Anyway, looks like that's it. Sean Astin and Paul Reiser. I thought there was another one. Anyway, but this show is just, it captures kind of like the idea that kids have this imagination and have this ability to see, you know, when the strange and bizarre things happen, they're the ones that seem to recognize and accept it a lot faster than adults, and they seem to be a step ahead. So it kind of gives credit to the child's imagination and also the friendship bond that these kids had, and also the bond they create with Eleven, and also the franticness of Winona Ryder's character. She did an amazing job. I don't really like Winona Ryder that much, but she did an amazing job in this in season one. And I think a lot of these names and actors that I've never heard of before, and I don't think they've done anything until this, just did an amazing job. And this was a very cool show. It sucked you right in. I mean, the music at the intro, the music even during, and some of the visual, I mean, everything just feels like it comes from a different era, and they nail it on the head so well. And I am looking forward to that in 2017, season two. I don't know when. I'm trying to find a date on it. Anyway, that is coming up as well. And I guess I can't really talk television without mentioning Game of Thrones. Yes, Game of Thrones is not science fiction. It is fantasy, but it is a truly gritty, realist epic, the likes of which American cinema and American TV really has not produced. This style of, I mean, Lord of the Rings is very romantic, very heroic, hero's journey. It's very darkness versus the light, good versus evil, white and beautiful and ugly. I mean, the lines are clearly drawn in Lord of the Rings. It's very romanticized. Game of Thrones is not. There's a lot of grays. Sometimes the good guys die because of stupidity. Sometimes the bad guys win. It's much more of a long-term strategic look at how... And also, it's just not about glorifying... I mean, it doesn't glorify aristocracy or nobility. I mean, the pursuit of the throne, the Iron Throne, is really not a pretty one. And these people have to do some pretty ugly, despicable things. And there's some things about having the Iron Throne that are just complicated. It's not an easy throne to maintain. And it's also, this also goes for all the other thrones throughout the Seven Kingdoms. They're not easy to maintain. I mean, we've seen so many people assassinated and killed out of their own houses, or death, and the challenges within houses, the challenges between houses. Very complicated, very complex. Draws from historical sources for the political side of it, like the War of the Roses in England in the medieval times, and also the fall of the Roman Empire. You see a lot of analogies or parallels with history. If you look at a map of Westeros, it looks just like England and Scotland, except a lot bigger. You notice that there's definitely a European flavor to all the cultures and styles and things of Westeros. Easteros definitely seems to be like Asia. The Dothraki appear to be the Mongolian hordes or the Hunnic hordes. The Valyrian Empire, which is kind of the precursor or the progenitor of all the cultures that we see in Game of Thrones, they had these vast cities in the south, along the South Sea, not unlike the Roman Empire in Rome in the Mediterranean. So it's an amazing show. As we approach these final two seasons, we are closing out the epic. George R. R. Martin has told the producers how the show ends, or how the epic ends, because his books are just not coming out fast enough. And I think for the most of the last season, it was the HBO writers and crew that were putting that together. So less and less of it is based on the novels series. I think none of it's based on the novels now. So I'm looking forward to this. Jon Snow is now King of the North. Daenerys Targaryen is coming to Westeros finally after six fucking seasons, or seven, or wherever the hell they're at. Oh, man, it's been a while since I watched it. Cersei, Queen Cersei. We have the women of the south of House Dorne. Not House Dorne. It was... See what happens when you don't watch the show for a long period of time. These things start just dropping out of your head. So House Martell and House Tyrell, both of them are now run by women, and both are because everyone else is dead or these women are particularly effective. Olenna Tyrell, the grandmother, who is just one of my favorite characters, amazing character, very just this crotchety old woman who just... She just doesn't give a fuck about anything. She doesn't take any shit from anyone. She is not polite. She does not do any social graces. She is not a courtier at all. And then you have this new woman running who murdered the head of the House Martell. She is the ex-wife or the lover of Prince Oberyn, who was killed by the Mountain. So she's now running the show with the three bastard daughters of that prince. So... just a lot of great stuff. There's a lot of things that could still happen. Everyone wants to see if the Dragon Queen takes over or not. What happens with Cersei? What happens with Jon Snow? What happens with the crippled kid in the north? And by the way, I also noticed that Game of Thrones has Bran Stark, who is crippled, and Vikings has Ivar the Boneless. I just can't help but think that one of the siblings in the Ragnar Lothbrok family is crippled. Well, he was born that way, and Bran fell off a tower. But still, there's one that's crippled, and they try to somehow fit that they have this special ability and special powers because they're crippled. And I don't know. I thought maybe that was kind of a cheap copy. I don't know. I think Vikings came after Game of Thrones. So anyway, I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, or if they were trying to go for that, you know. But I just couldn't help but notice, because I generally tend to, from what I've read throughout history, typically cripples are either put to death or they just don't live very long. So, all right, back to sci-fi. The Expanse continues here starting in February, I think February 1st, on Sci-Fi Channel. It is arguably the best space opera on television. The first season was very good. These are based on the books by James S.A. Corey, which is actually two authors, Dan Abrams and blanking on the other guy's name. Anyway, it's set about 200 years in the future, where we have colonized Mars, the moon, and a bunch of planetoids and moons throughout the solar system. And there's kind of like this political intrigue taking place, this new proto-molecule that kills people. And so there's all sorts of things. It is similar. Some people have called it Game of Thrones in space. I don't know if that really captures what's going on here, but it's very smart. Not perfect. I mean, there's some things about it that are annoying or don't make a lot of sense. And honestly, the first book in the Expanse series is the weakest one. I have not read the others, but and I did not like the first. I thought the first book in the Expanse series was average. Everyone tells me it's the weakest one in the series and that I should have continued. So Maybe I should have. But the first book just wasn't that good. I honestly think the TV series, season one, which covers the book, did a better job than the book. But anyway, great show. Very cool. That's probably, in terms of space operas, I think that's the premier one that's going ongoing, not the new ones. I think we all know which space opera is going to be the highlight of 2017. I'll get to that in a second. Season two of Humans comes to AMC in February as well. That's easily one of the smartest AI TV shows I've seen in a long time. Hollywood just generally does AI two different ways. It's either Frankenstein or Commander Data, or Pinocchio, as I like to call it, too. Those are the only, that's what it is usually. It's Frankenstein, Skynet, whatever. They're here to destroy us, or it's the little robot that wants to be human. And basically, it's a copy of a copy of a copy. They have not been original for a long time. Humans is got some nice twists to it. It's unique in some ways, not so much in others. And there's kind of like this critique of humanity through the perspective of the synths. And the synths are imperfect as well, with varying personalities. And they interact, they're dynamic with each other. And the dynamic they have with the family, the human family that protects them, was very, very cool. And definitely was a different view of the kind of AI-human relationship. I thought it was amazing. I thought the kind of social commentary behind it and the what if was very, very smart and very well done. You felt like that's exactly what's going to happen once we have robots, or synths, as they call them. They are going to be our servants, basically. They're going to walk around and we're going to become attached to them the same way we become attached to pets or maybe our cars, whatever. We know they're not human. We know they're not conscious, but we still kind of treat them that as such. And also, I mean, let's all be honest here. The minute we can make lifelike or human-like robots, one of the first products off the line is going to be sex bots. I mean, I wish we were better than that, but we're not. And we see in the show that there is an actual adult option on these robots, and they're all designed to mimic, human sexuality, physical sensual responses, and things like that. You could see it in the episode when Anita's entire demeanor changed once the adult mode was activated, and then you see that everything that they do is recorded, and so that's how the wife found out that the husband was sleeping with Anita, the synth. Very cool. And I mean, that's all designed to protect, to ensure that these synths don't hurt anyone, that they can fix things very quickly. I mean, we all have like cell phones and we have to get updates, or we have, you know, anything with computers or anything. You always have like bugs. You need updates, you need patches and things like that. Well, if you have a synth and it either hurts somebody or does something like that, you have to get on top of it very fast. And you also have to protect against tampering, hacking, whatever. And so the show Humans covers all that. It heads all those things off in a very smart way. And I'm looking forward to season two. There was a couple storylines left open. I thought the acting and some of the characters, some of the synths were very, very, I just think it was very well done. I'm looking forward to that as well. All right. And the final TV show that I am looking forward to, although I have some concerns, is of course one of the flagships of science fiction, Star Trek. Yes, the new Star Trek TV show, the first since Star Trek Enterprise, which I believe finished off about 10 years ago. This new one is called Star Trek Discovery, and there's already been some interesting, first of all, it was pushed off, the premiere was pushed off 6 months, and we had no information on the cast. Well, after they announced the delay, then they started announcing some of the casting choices made, so let's go through a couple of them real quick. Michelle Yeoh is going to play Captain Giorgio. I don't know how it's pronounced, but she is a big, big-time player. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, about 500 other movies. So that is a big effing deal. She plays a captain, so she might end up being the new captain. But it's not the Enterprise. It'll be the Starship Discovery. This will take place, I think, a few years before the original Star Trek series. So it's going to be relatively contemporary with Kirk, Spock, etc. A little bit before them, but not too much. Another name that jumps out, Sonequa Martin-Green, who of course plays Sasha in Walking Dead. She plays Lieutenant Commander Rainsford. So I'm judging by the cast, and by the producers, Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman, the writers. I'm cautiously optimistic, although I am a little worried that CBS has control of this show. I don't trust CBS with these kind of things. And also the show is delayed 6 months. And also I'm just a little disappointed that this takes place. This is basically a prequel. I'm getting very tired of Star Trek prequels. I think why can't we look ahead past DS9 and Voyager? Star Trek kept looking forward, looking forward, looking forward. That's the whole point of the franchise. And yet for the last 10 years, we just are obsessed with prequels to Star Trek. We cannot go past. We just keep reviewing what we've already seen. I don't think Gene Roddenberry would be too happy with that. I think he would be disappointed that we're basically rehashing old stories or trying to fill in the gaps or trying to do reboots. And I just don't think he would really be happy with that. I think it runs contrary to what Star Trek is supposed to be culturally, entertainment-wise. It's just, I'm a little disappointed, but I apparently am in the minority because I have yet to run into somebody who agrees with me. Everyone seems to be very excited about this thing because it is Star Trek, but I just really wish there was a Star Trek that took place either around the time of Voyager and DS9 or maybe afterwards, because those shows have been done for about 15 to 20 years. So, I mean, tracking with what happens normally from Star Trek to Star Trek, it's supposed to progress down the star dates, and we just haven't been able to do that. So, to round off television here, I'll do it real quick because I don't really want to talk about. These are shows, big-time shows, that I am either not looking forward to or are skeptical about looking forward. These are negatives, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But obviously, I've already said my feelings on The Walking Dead. I think episode 42, 43 covered my disappointment in the current season and my general feeling that the show is nearing its end. It's mature, it's past its peak, and it's about time to start putting together a closing act to this great, great story, this beautiful show, one of the best shows ever done, the best horror show I've ever seen. I think it's better than X-Files, and X-Files arguably is not really horror, although parts of it definitely were. All these shows based on Marvel comics, DC comics, I don't really enjoy them that much. I think they're more geared towards younger viewers, young adult, and they're more about wish fulfillment. They're more about like just, some of them can be very serious, some of them can be very powerful, but most of them are just kiddie shows, and they pick sexy young actors who can't really act to be in these shows and wear these costumes, and the dialogue and everything is clearly geared towards teens and tweens, and I'm sorry, but none of them have ever really been able to capture my attention for more than a few episodes. It just doesn't work. I am told I should give Gotham another try. I gave up on Gotham after 2 episodes, but I guess I should give that one another try. But as for all the Legends of Tomorrow, Agents of I just don't, I'm just not never that interested in those kind of shows anyway, and these, none of them have ever really just made a big, but there's a ton of them, of course. There's like maybe 15 of them throughout television. I mean, that's the wonderful thing. We're living in the golden age of television. There's no doubt about that. Anything you want to watch, you're going to find it. I mean, anything. I mean, there's a whole variety and there's a whole spectrum of TV out there. Obviously, superheroes and things like that has a huge, huge bandwidth on the spectrum, but you can find plenty of other things. So I'm not going to complain too much about, oh, there's way too many superhero shows. Like, fine. There are, but there's also a ton of other shows. I have no problem finding good stuff to watch. So, but those are the kind of shows that I'm just not too excited about in 2017. I honestly feel like superheroes, the superhero genre, if it is a genre, I think it's peaking. I don't think it can really break any more records. I think Avengers is winding down in the next 3 years. I just don't think DC's on the right footing. I think DC is in for a big fall in the Justice League movie, and I just don't think Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad were very good. And seems like the audience didn't respond very well to the movies either. I mean, they made a lot of money, but I think that was mostly on hype, and because they were the first in an exciting new reboot of the Superman Batman, kind of thing going on. But I think the response was not overly positive with the people who did fork out the $15 to see it. So I think the next set of DC movies will not do that well. I really think we're going to see big time superhero movies and TV shows all the way into probably 2019, 2020. I think maybe around then you'll see maybe audiences' attentions, or maybe the audience, the law of diminishing returns, in other words. I think around then you'll see the box office sales go down, the TV ratings go down. I think maybe around then, because this can't go on forever. We've had tons of movies, tons of TV shows. It's been oversaturated, and at some point, the audience is going to start walking away and losing interest because it's old and it's becoming stale. I do think we have a couple more years before that happens, but I think maybe in the next 2 to 4 years, we're going to see I think you're going to see us trend away from superheroes. But, what do I know? Turning to movies. Now, I have a full list of the science fiction slash fantasy movies. Not all the fantasies. There's a few fantasy I kind of clip away because I don't have an interest. So these are predominantly science fiction, superhero, zombie, kind of right on the fringes. But I have a list of them. There's about, I don't know, 25 of them here. But I'm going to talk about the five that I am looking the most forward to this year in 2017, and then maybe cover a few of the others really quickly, and then we're going to call it an episode. So, all right, movies. All right, everyone knows the biggest science fiction movie of 2017, so I'm going to save that for later. I'm almost going to go in chronological order, in the order they will be released, so that way we don't really get too wrapped up into the big one that's going to be out in December of 2017, then the name that shall not be named. So, well, we'll get to that later. First movie, Ghost in the Shell. It's based on a classic movie from 17, 18 years ago. It's set in Japan in the near future when human robotics have reached a point where there's people uploading themselves to robots all the time, that computers are now powerful enough to absorb and integrate a human consciousness into itself. And it's about Major Mutoko, who has had her entire consciousness transferred over into a soldier robot. She doesn't have much memories of her past. She does know, they do kind of tell her that they saved her from some accident, that her body, she was in a coma, she was going to die if they didn't upload her. And in exchange for saving her life, she has to serve this Section 6 or Section 8, I can't remember. So they're basically like this secret MI6 kind of group, with some military authority and some policing. And the Major is going to be played by Scarlett Johansson, which I know a lot of people are upset about because takes place in Japan and Mutoko is Japanese. Or it's just listed here as the Major, but that's what everyone calls her in the TV show, the Major. Nobody really uses her given or her real her name's given surname, whatever. Just looking at some of these other members of the cast, we have Juliette Binoche, Michael Pitt. Yeah, I think that's obviously this is a Scarlett Johansson movie. I mean, she's the biggest name here by far. There's no one else in here that's really gonna jump out at you, except for I guess they're trying to say Michael Wincott's the other big name, but I don't really know who Michael Wincott is. Yeah, I don't know who this guy is, but he's in it. But this is a ScarJo movie, and people are upset because she is not Japanese. The character is Japanese. The movie takes place in Japan. There's going to be a lot of Japanese and Asian actors and actresses in this movie, except for the lead role. I'll have to see how she does. If she does an amazing job as the Major, and it's pretty clear that she just was the best one for the job, then I don't really have a problem with this kind of. I don't have a problem in general with movies that will cast somebody for a role that is of a different ethnicity or national origin than the. Because to me, that's just as racist or just as discriminatory as, purposefully, casting a bunch of white people because you don't want to cast black people and then you put the black paint on their face and whatever, like they used to do back in the day. To me, to only accept, for a Japanese character, to only accept, auditions from Japanese actresses would have been it's not really necessary. We shouldn't have to do that. We should, if it's going to be merit-based, if we are going to be racially blind, ethnically blind, and non-discriminatory, these roles have to be given out based out on the merits. Now, having said that, everyone had a problem with Tilda Swinton being the Ancient One in Doctor Strange. And I was willing to give her the benefit of the doubt because of I thought maybe they were doing it because Tilda Swinton was just excellent, was just amazing, was so perfect for the role, and they reimagined the role and just decided, you know what, we have to go in this direction because of how good this came out. I saw the movie and I just disagreed. I don't think she added a whole lot. I don't think switching her ethnicity made the damn bit of difference. So in my opinion, you might as well have gone with an old Asian dude, which I believe what the Ancient One is supposed to be in the comics. So in that sense, I kind of felt, why did you change the character, ethnicity and gender? I was hoping there was a merit-based reason for doing that. I didn't see it. The gender is correct, the overall look of the character is correct, but Scarlett Johansson is not Japanese. So maybe Scarlett Johansson's a talented actress for the most part. I think a lot of people give her a pass because of how beautiful she is. I honestly have seen some movies where everyone says she did an amazing job, and I just didn't see it. She's an above average to good actress. I mean, I think she's been nominated for some big time awards, and I do believe that she was probably, for the most part, it is merit based. But I just don't see her as like a top elite actress. But this is an action movie. This is a science fiction action movie. This isn't something that's going to garner Oscar nominations. So the question is, who besides Scarlett Johansson would you have be the major? The names that come to mind are not Japanese. I mean, I know there's very good Japanese actresses out there, but none of them really jump out at me like, that's the major. That's the major. The two names that I came up with were actually Michelle Yeoh, who might be a little bit, you know, just physically isn't the best fit for the role and is kind of an older, more senior in the sense that high ranking, I should say, not senior as in old. Role. I mean, her presence is more of that of a captain, you know, which is what she's going to be in Star Trek. So not really what the major is, even though her rank is major. She's basically kind of like the squad leader or platoon leader, and is a kind of a field commander of sorts. So somebody who's, you know, not 20 years old, but also not 40 or 50. So that's, anyway, Michelle Yeoh was one possibility. The other one was, where is she? Zhang Ziyi, who has been in a bunch of movies, including Rush Hour and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I do not think she is Japanese either. She is Chinese, as I recall. And I'm not sure that she carries enough presence, because I don't think she's that tall or that particularly imposing physically. I think the major, because she's an android body, is supposed to be beautiful and, you know, female, but also physically highly athletic and imposing in some ways. I think in the show, I don't know how tall the character is supposed to be, but I think she has a pretty good amount of size to her. But anyway, we're just getting into physical measurements here. This isn't really on the merits on who could actually do the job as the major. But let's be honest here. The major is largely an android, so there's not really a lot of dramatic acting taking place here. So who can play a female android? I mean, just about anyone. So as long as you get the right age and the right kind of presence and the right athleticism, you know, that narrows the list down maybe a little bit. Well, who's the most high profile athletic, you know, action star out there? It's Scarlett Johansson. She's one of them. So I think this could work. I think this could be all right. I think maybe they probably should have looked for somebody who fit the physical traits for the ethnicity first. But I'm not really one who's going to say that, oh yeah, it should have been a Japanese act. Because, you know, if Scarlett Johansson honestly was a better fit for the character, then they should have gone with her, and maybe that's what the case is here. So I'm going to withhold judgment on the casting on Ghost in the Shell. I love the idea of this finally being made into a movie, a live-action movie. So I'm looking forward to it. The trailers look really cool. So there's that one. The next one, which premieres in May, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. The trailer is amazing with Baby Groot. I just think that's just freaking adorable. And I cannot wait. The kind of interaction between the Rocket Raccoon, who's kind of like almost like a semi-father, older brother figure to Groot, and like their buddies in the first movie. I think that's so freaking cool. I just can't wait for this. The previews like show a lot of funny scenes, a lot of great action and visuals. This part of the Marvel Universe has kind of like a fifth element kind of feel to it, with, you know, fabulous visuals and scenery and a bunch of weird aliens, you know, just basically people with different colored skin, blue, red, green. I mean, it's kind of like old school, like 60s, 50s, 60s views on what aliens would look like. Basically, humans with different colored skin. This is Star Trek remade. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it could be very funny and exciting. The style of it and the kind of the feel to it is different than the rest of the, not too much, but a little bit to the other Marvel movies. So I think that's going to be very cool. Cannot wait for that one. All right, moving on. In July, we will see The Dark Tower, based on the Stephen King classic, which I have yet to read, but it is definitely on my to-read pile. It is a, I think, dystopian, post-apocalyptic future, kind of a Wild West kind of feel to it. I cannot wait to see this because of a few reasons. One, it stars Catherine Winnick as Laurie Chambers. Catherine Winnick is Lagertha from Vikings, who is just awesome. Just awesome. Number two reason, Idris Elba plays Roland Deschain, or the Gunslinger. Idris Elba is one of the coolest, one of the best actors. I would have voted for him for the next James Bond. He still has my vote. So if he's the next James Bond, I will be very happy. This guy's one of the best. He's one of the best action, best overall kind of actors out there. His presence is amazing. Matthew McConaughey is the Man in Black. Another guy that, you know, when he's in the right role and he's in the right mindset, he's an amazing actor. When he's in the wrong role, he is more of a joke. But I think this might actually work for him. So casting is awesome. Source material is supposed to be awesome. The director and writer of the screenplay is Nicolas Arcel. He has a pretty significant background with The Girl, The Dragon Tattoo, A Royal Affair, but he's mostly known for a writer. I tried to find some really great director credits. Other than A Royal Affair, I really couldn't find anything that I recognized. So I don't think, so they didn't go with like a really, really high profile director, but they went with a pretty experienced writer and a guy that has some pretty good credits. They have an amazing cast. I think this one really could be special if they did it right. Stephen King books can turn out to be amazing movies. Shawshank Redemption. So I'm looking forward to this. I think that could be a really cool one. Also in July is The War for the Planet of the Apes, number 3 in the Apes reboot. The first two were very, very cool. I think very well done. I think that the second one kind of steadily moved a little bit away, not too much, but a little bit away from the kind of themes of the first one, kind of the overall feel of the originals and the source material, the novel by, I can't remember the author's name. Anyway, so this third one is, it appears that Caesar and the apes are aging. Caesar's older now. He seems to have some gray whiskers. He has some kids, but he's still basically the leader of this ape tribe on the West Coast. There's this new human force, militarized, basically have declared war on the apes, as we saw at the end of the second movie. They are headed by Woody Harrelson, who doesn't like to wear shirts and shaves his head in front of everyone in the preview. So I'm looking forward to this. I think Andy Serkis is one of the most talented people on the planet. He will be doing the facial expressions. He's Caesar, basically. He's also King Kong. He's also, I mean, every other Gollum. I mean, he is every CGI character of the last 20 years has been Andy Serkis. He's a just deeply talented man. And I think these movies have a feel to them that are kind of more critical of humanity, kind of puts the perspective on ourselves. And the way that some of these other movies have pointed out, like they're a little bit more of a realistic and kind of sobering view of ourselves as a species, as civilization, and how we would react to being knocked down a peg. And, you know, some of us would maybe be a credit to everything that we've become. Many of us would not. So I think this could be a very cool movie. I'm a little worried that maybe they're starting to stretch a little bit too far and they might just hit on the same themes as the last movie and just basically turning this into an ape versus human action gunfight. The trailers seem to suggest this could be just a war. No, I mean, the name of the movie is War for the Planet of the Apes, so I mean it is going to be a war movie, but I kind of hope it's a little bit more than just war. I think they will. I'm not too worried about it, but anyway. And with that, we go to the movie that science fiction fans are probably just losing their minds to see, Episode 8 of Star Wars, Who Are Rey's Parents? who is Snoke? We'll get finally the answers. I mean, if you go to YouTube, you will find dozens and dozens of fan theories on who Rey's parents are, who Snoke is, what's going to go on afterwards, what we're going to see. The continuation, Rey meets Luke Skywalker out in the remote reaches of space after he's been in hiding for years. What happens with Princess Leia? Carrie Fisher, we lost Carrie Fisher a few weeks ago, which was very sad. That's a huge, huge loss. Very talented woman, very, very unique perspective, given her background as being a super, basically being a huge celebrity at age 19 and 20, and dealing with bipolar disorder and mental illness through most of her life. You know, it's bad. Even people with a normal kind of brain chemistry can be just, Hollywood and stardom can tear them apart, and just warp everything. And she had to deal with bipolar disorder and all that. And also she reached a level of stardom that very few women or very few actors as a whole, regardless of gender, have ever reached. The tributes to Princess Leia, I mean, and not just Carrie Fisher. The Carrie Fisher tributes are massive as well. But the tributes to her character, Princess Leia, on Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, the online game, some of the other things you've seen, if you go to YouTube or if you go just Google it, it's really amazing. I've read that they did episode 8, they're already done with it, so all her work was done for episode 9. They had intended for her to be pretty significant in episode 9, so they're going to have to decide whether they want to go the CGI route the way they did with Tarkin and Princess Leia in Rogue One. They might decide to do that. I don't know if they really want to press that too hard, because I don't know how much of that fan, because when you know it's a CGI character, you kind of, they're very, very good at it, but you watch more than 15, 20 seconds, that's not a human actor. And it might take away a little bit from the experience. So I'm not sure if they really want to go that route. I know I would hate for them to change the story because Carrie Fisher passed away, and to alter it into something else, instead of maybe just finding either another actress to be Princess, to be Leia Organa Solo, or to CGI it. You don't want to alter something you've already mastered and worked on for a long time to deal with something like that. So anyway, that is probably the movie. It's I think Ghost in the Shell, Dark Tower, and Star Wars are the three movies I'm looking forward to the most. I think I really think 2016 was a down year for movies. I think 2017 could be a very strong year for science fiction movies, based on this lineup here. There's a lot of crap in here too. So with now that I've gone through all the positive movies that I feel really good about, let's go through some of the ones that I'm either skeptical or just don't understand why they've decided to make it. All right, let's go through the superhero movies that could be good, but I'm just not very excited about, because I'm just starting to wear out. Wonder Woman premieres here in a couple months. I think she is the one DC character that really deserves a movie and has deserved a movie for a long time, and she is probably something that should have played a bigger role in The Dawn of Justice, Batman v Superman. I think her introduction was probably the biggest one. So I actually think that could be a good movie. I've seen the trailers. I'm really worried about a period piece, a Wonder Woman movie being a period piece of World War I. I'm not really, and the way they've decided to depict the island and her people and everything, I'm a little worried that this is going to be kind of what happened to Tarzan, where it's just out of time. It's a period piece, and people just don't respond to that era and to that kind of imagery the way they used to. So I'm a little bit worried about that, but I still think that Gal Gadot, the idea of it, the character is the movie is long overdue. So I will go see it, but I'm not like huge hyped up on it, because she's not one of my favorite characters, and I am skeptical that DC and all the whole crew over there can do it right. But maybe, I know I could be wrong. So, and also Chris Pine's in it, so that's something. We are getting the Justice League movie in December. As of now, I think it says December. I don't think they're actually going to stay to that. I mean, these release dates can change. I don't think Justice League wants to go head-to-head with Episode 8, so I anticipate that Justice League will premiere a few weeks before Star Wars. I think that they're betting very, very high on the build-up of the characters that has happened with the TV shows and also the movies. So Batman and Wonder Woman will be built up from a couple movies. Flash will be built up from the TV show. Of course, they're going to use a different actor to be Flash. Cyborg, I don't know anything about that character, so I don't know if that's going to work. But I know the cartoon, you know, the Teen Titans cartoon and everything has used a lot of these characters. So maybe younger audiences will be more familiar with these characters than I am. Aquaman has been a running joke for a long time and has been the butt of many jokes on Family Guy and on Robot Chicken. They picked, you know, Jason Momoa to be him. That could work. I don't know, but they're going to try and make it work. A guy who talks to fish as a superhero, where every single battle that seems to take place in a superhero movie happens on land. I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm very curious to see how they do it. But I don't know. I was disappointed in Batman versus Superman. I was disappointed in Suicide Squad, and I don't really expect them to turn it around with Justice League. This is their version of the Avengers 4 years or two or three years after Avengers. I think they're coming in a little bit too late with this, and I just don't think their core characters are built up enough. We don't know anything about this version of the Flash or Aquaman or Cyborg. We barely know this Batman, this Ben Affleck Batman, or Baflack. And the Superman isn't really all that impressive. This Henry Cavill Superman isn't all that impressive. So I'm just not looking forward to that one. Back on the Marvel side, we have Spider-Man Homecoming with, I think it's Tom Holland. And of course, we're going to see Iron Man in it, because I think the Avengers has finally realized that in order for their movies to really, really take off, they need Robert Downey Jr. Civil War is case in point. It's kind of like the same way that the X-Men movies just give you a heavy, heavy dose of Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, because they realize that is their most interesting character, and the rest of them just cannot carry their own weight. I mean, why else would Wolverine have to be in every single fucking X-Men movie? Almost every single one. But I don't know. I'm not a fan of the Spider-Man. I never have been. I think the Tobey Maguire movies were more annoying than entertaining. I mean, the whole just... they're just not for me. I don't really like the character all that much. I just don't relate to him in any way. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But so I'm not the core audience. And I know it's going to make a lot of money. Spider-Man is a very popular character. But this is the third reboot. They keep trying and trying and trying to just shove this character down everyone's throat. I just don't. So, not looking forward to that. Thor Ragnarok. I don't really like the Thor movies. They're funny. But they're not really that interesting to me. Let's see. Logan. All right, here's the other superhero movie, Logan, which is another X-Men movie, which basically takes place on its own timeline. Everyone's old, everyone's dying, and mutants are, I don't know. X-Men as a franchise, I think, has run its course. I don't think there's much left. There's not... They have the wrong people running it. They have the wrong directors, the wrong writers. I think they rely way too much on big time celebrities on casting. I mean, they put in some of the most talented casts out there, and they just cannot deliver, you know, Avenger style success. Their movies just aren't that good. Their casts are amazing. Their movies are not good. And their storylines are not good. I mean, they all have their own timelines. There is no consistency to them. Barely two or three of them connect with one another. And then they just start all over with no explanation. I mean, it just doesn't... it's not epic. It's not a broader franchise. And they just obviously... they put everything they need on special effects and, you know, a cast that people would just... anyone else could probably try to find a way to make work. They just don't do it. So I'm not looking forward to Logan. I will go see it, but I have very low expectations. Speaking of franchises that are basically on their deathbeds, or should be dead, Alien Covenant. Everywhere I turn, people get so excited about new Alien movies, and they just feel like all the rumors, this and that, they're going to do this, this is going to take place here. The blogs always wake up about the Alien franchise, but I just have to point out that most of the movies are terrible. I mean, Alien vs. Predator was meh at best. Predators was actually pretty decent. I did like Predators. But Alien vs. Predator Requiem, awful. Alien 3, awful. Alien Resurrection, awful. Prometheus, mediocre at best. The best movies in this franchise are all 30 years old. And I just do not expect anything different from this one. Ridley Scott is a part of this. Ridley Scott's a genius, and he's in the Mount Rushmore of science fiction. But I'm sorry, this franchise has not made a good movie in a long time, and I just don't expect any different from this one. World War Z 2, yeah, that's how it's written here too. By the way, World War Z and then 2. So I hope that's not going to be the final title. The first one was terrible. The book is amazing. The book is incredible. The movie was a joke, and I don't know why they're making a sequel. Cloverfield. There's another Cloverfield movie in the works. I don't know if it's coming out in 2017. I can't find a release date, and there's no details on it. So, but it could be interesting. The Cloverfield movies are actually pretty cool. They're low key. They're kind of smart, and if you see the movies, they have a indie kind of low budget, you know, let's make the most out of less, you know, do more with less kind of feel to them, and I like that. The Space Between Us looks more, it comes out in February with Asa Butterfield, who played Ender in Ender's Game. That could be, it looks like a love story, but it's a time, you know, space travel, got kid who grows up on Mars, comes back to Earth, kind of feels a little bit similar to Stranger in a Strange Land without the telekinesis and the mind control and the other superpowers he had. Also, I don't think it has the hippie kind of philosophical social commentary, but so actually it is nothing like that, so forget I just said that. But anyway, it could be good. I mean, but I think it is going to be more of a kind of a teenage love story than anything else, but it is a little bit of a sci-fi thing. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is another title I don't understand. I'm sure there's an explanation for it in the movie. It does. I worried based on the previews, it could either be like The Fifth Element with a ton of visuals, you know, tons of special effects, tons of visuals, or it could be Jupiter Ascending. And it stars Kara. What's her name? She was Enchantress, Cara Delevingne, who's a. Look, I don't know if she grew up as an actress. My impression of her is that she is a supermodel turned actress because she doesn't really seem to act much. And I just don't. Suicide Squad is Enchantress. Kids in Love. That's about it. Yep, fashion model with very angry eyes. Not really sure why writers, casters seem to think she can act. I have not seen it yet. I just looked at her filmography, nothing stands out whatsoever. But the director of Valerian and A City of a Thousand Planets is Luc Besson, and that name is very familiar. And there's also, I mean, there's Ethan Hawke, and there's a few other names. So, like, there's some good people on. But Luc Besson is known for, let's see, because I know this name, so I'm going to go through a few of them. All right. A lot of TV here, for sure. Taken. Columbiana, he did the screenplay for that. All right, so this guy's a writer turned director. Okay, so that's the story with this dude, Luc Besson. That's why I know his name. He's written a lot of very big screenplays, The Fifth Element, and a bunch of TV shows. So his name has popped up a bunch of times. He's probably just never, doesn't seem like he's directed anything big. But I don't know, this movie could be special, or it could be Jupiter Ascending. We'll see. The sequel to King Kong comes out. I don't know why they're doing this. John Goodman, it has John Goodman, Brie Larson, Tom Hiddleston, you know, John C. Reilly, Samuel L. Jackson, a big all-star cast with special effects. Andy Serkis as King Kong. King Kong looks like he's about 400 feet tall in this movie. And, I mean, it seems like it's more funny and more of what King Kong was that Peter Jackson did. But, I mean, it's going to make a lot of money, and it could be really good, so I could be wrong on that. But I'm just not too excited about that one. The Mummy with Tom Cruise, there's nothing about that sounds of interest to me. The movie Life, I saw previews for it. It had Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal. Basically, somebody, I guess a space station finds extraterrestrial life, and it turns out to be aggressive and nasty. You know, I've seen that premise. That's the premise of tons and tons of books and movies and TV shows. So I don't know if they're going to, and it's another high profile cast and some special effects. So hopefully they realize that you can't just throw those things together and expect to make a lot of money. And I will point to the movie Passengers as case in point. Passengers is officially a bomb. It's not going to make any money. It's cost about $200 million to make, and as of today, it's only made about $180 or $190 million in the box office, and half of that money is going to go to the actual theaters and not to the production companies. So that bombed out despite having Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt and some very, very cool visuals and a premise that has been explored by science fiction dozens of times over the decades. So putting all those things together in a movie does not guarantee success. That movie was not good, and it deserves to deserves to be where it is. That's all I'm going to say. The final movie that I will talk about, and this is a movie that I know everyone disagrees with me on this. I did not really think Blade Runner was that great of a movie. It's a good movie for its time, but I just don't get it. I don't understand why it's considered one of the greatest of all time. To me, it's not that great. The acting is weird. It's disjointed. Some of the scenes, I mean, with Harrison Ford, he just kind of looks at somebody, or he looks at the camera, that's all the scene is. And I don't know. I don't get it. I think the cyberpunk aesthetic is very cool, and the overall kind of themes of the source material is very cool. The movie's a good movie, but I just don't understand why Blade Runner is considered this groundbreaking achievement in science fiction. It just is not. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep is definitely a science fiction classic novel. The movie is just a good movie, but I am obviously in the minority on that, and tons of people disagree with me, and fine, but that's just where I stand. So what happens? They're going to make a sequel about, I don't know, 30 years later, called Blade Runner 2049. They're going to dig up Harrison Ford, just like they did for Indiana Jones, just like they did for Han Solo. They're cashing in on Harrison Ford kind of doing this victory tour of all his great, you know, career, all the great franchises he's been a part of. They're doing it again. They're adding Ryan Gosling to it. And I just don't understand what could possibly be the premise. I just don't where can you go with what the last movie did? And what can you explore that has not been explored dozens and dozens and dozens of times? Blade Runner was a groundbreaking movie because it was one of the first to, I guess, look at AI in a different way. But AI has, I mean, we just mentioned about two or three other AI movies that probably are just as insightful, if not more so. So I just don't understand why this movie is being resurrected. It's a movie that I know a lot of the fans of Blade Runner and hardcore fans have been probably love this idea, but what do they expect? How can you make a sequel to that film? You have to completely manufacture an entirely new narrative, and that could be great, that could be average, that could be terrible, but there's not much it can work off of from the original movie. There just isn't, other than Harrison Ford. So I'm definitely in the minority on that. I'm sure everyone listening to this, all five of you, disagree with me. Fine, but I just, I'm done. So, all right. So that kind of covers everything. So my top movies that I am looking forward to in the year 2017, and I do think this is gonna be a good year for movies, for science fiction in general. I have a good feeling. Movies, TV, everything. So movies: Ghost in the Shell, The Dark Tower, War for the Planet of the Apes, Star Wars, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. For TV: Star Trek Discovery, Humans, The Expanse, Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, and The Handmaid's Tale. Those are my kind of picks for 2017. If I could predict the future, I would say those are all going to be insanely good and make tons of money. But I cannot predict the future very well. I'm pretty bad at it. I really thought Hillary Clinton would be the president, and me and a lot of other people were very wrong about that. So, and when it comes to movies, I think I do a little bit better than political predictions, but I am no entertainment Nostradamus, not at all. So anyway, I am going to leave it there for episode 46. I have no real plans or any idea what the next episode will be, so you will just have to see. So that will do it for this episode. I'm Wesley Fox. This is Thought Crime, and thanks, and until next time.